elsewhere. We also have apologies from Professor Ndabandaba. I'm not sure as to the reason why, but be that as it may. Nkosi Patigile Holomisa and Mr. J.B. Sibanyoni, who apparently will join us later. Are there any further apologies, honourable members? If not, then that'll be that. We will try our level best to have the minister join us during these budgetary deliberations. DG, welcome to you and your team. We're looking forward to your presentation. Can we get the show on the road by asking you to introduce members of your entourage, most of whom we've met, but just in case there are those we haven't.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I would start with the second lecture. Advocate Julian is the extreme gentleman. Mr. Johnson is our acting CFO. Mr. Shabalala is head of corporate services. Mr. Singh is responsible for procurement in the department, the finance section. Ms. P. Is in legal services, and Mr. Basson is the acting chief master. And then on my extreme side is Advocate Ratman, who is responsible for legislation, Ms. Mpashele, who is responsible for strategy development, our chief operations officer, Dr. Devere, and myself, Nkululeko Sindan, the DG. Thank you, Chair.
Very much. Yes, very important person you've overlooked.
My apologies, Chair and honourable members. I am also supported and accompanied by the NDPP Advocate Simelane and Mr. Sibiya, who's head of our budget, and a colleague of ours, Mr. Rendane from National Treasury. Thank you, Chair. My apologies again.
And I take it you're going to make a presentation?
Chair, we are making a presentation. I just wanted to show. Thank you very much. good morning, Chair and honourable members. We will try and keep our presentation reasonably short so that we can receive guidance from this honourable house. We did circulate the presentation as well as we did follow the processes for the tabling of the strategic plan for the next 5 years. The presentation looks at a few things. Primarily, it has the introduction that then talks to our national regional values. It speaks to the planning framework. We are doing it for the first time this year, for a year at least. It speaks to the sources of our mandate as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. And as to the organizational context, we felt it was necessary that we state what our context is. We didn't go to elaborate on the context, but we do deal with it, especially in areas that present themselves as challenges. We then look at our strategic goals and finally look at the strategic objectives for all the programs, which is Program 1, 2, and 3. In the strategic as well as, of course, constitutional Chapter 9 institutions. And then we conclude, Chair. Our vision as a department is really to have a transformed and accessible justice system which promotes and protects social justice, fundamental human rights, as well as freedoms. Our mission, we call to provide transparent, responsive and accountable justice for all. And then we are guided by the following values and principles as well as aspirations. Our commitment to constitutional values and to a culture of human rights in South Africa. We are committed to the superior, generally the broad, good corporate governance, good professionalism and continuous improvement, but most important of all, we are also committed to transparency. The plenary process followed as much as it was possible the plan, the framework for strategic plans and other performance plans that are set out by in terms of the Treasury Department. We followed that as much as we were able to do that. Our strategic plan identifies a lot of other important outcomes, related goals as well as objectives against which public institutions amongst others were measured, and that's what we've tried to allow ourselves to. We are currently developing the annual performance plan, which will indicate more crisply our targets as we move forward. The requirement in terms of the framework is that our targets must be absolutely smart, and the first indication of how smart they are going to be will come out of the annual performance plan, which we are currently working on and has to be finalized and submitted at the end of April. Where do we get our mandates? Our founding document, basically, as a country, gives us the fundamental mandates that we operate in terms of. Basically, the constitution in the main will give us the mandate. But over and above the constitution, we'll also take our mandates from the various legislative instruments that are developed in terms of the constitution. Basically, our mandate was set as twofold. One, to provide an environment for effective and efficient administration of justice. And the second was to promote constitutional development through the development of legislation, implementation of programs to deepen and nurture our constitutional democracy. On this slide, we try to articulate not only but some of the relevant frameworks that give us certain responsibilities. We derive our statutory mandate from various pieces of legislation, in the form of statutes as well as subordinate legislation. The following are just but a few that we rely upon. The first one, the establishment and the function of superior courts, magistrate courts, as well as special courts. That legislation will give us these responsibilities to ensure that those courts do exist once they are established. Also, the issue around the appointment of judges will provide the support through which the Judicial Services Commission and ultimately the President makes the appointments for judges. So far as magistrates are concerned, we do the same thing in terms of providing that support. With respect to the establishment and functioning of the National Prosecuting Authority, we have the ongoing support as well as now at this stage, I remain the accounting officer for the NPA, and we are progressing to an end state where that is likely to change, and I think this matter was discussed at some point in this house where we were discussing some challenges that we are experiencing. So that work is currently underway. The function of other bodies such as another report, the Grand Commission apologies for that. We've just progressed the whole process there is the engagement between those organizations as well as the Minister of Justice being the responsible executive authority. We provide that support. Chapter 9 institutions, other than being a routine machinery in terms of the budget, we also be providing more active support in instances where that support has been identified, recognizing the independence of Chapter 9 institutions. So to the extent that the support that is required, we make ourselves available to provide and do provide that support from time to time as and when we are called upon to do so. The processes around the appointment of the masters, the High Court, we are responsible for that, and again, we are here in respect to in regards to indicate that we have not done an appointment yet. We are disappointed by some of the responses we are getting from the application processes that we are following. The provision of legal and advisory services to government, in particular, we are providing that support, and we are invited to do that through the State Affairs Act, as well as various other pieces of legislation. The enforcement of people's rights, in terms of power, as well as people, we have a full machinery that supports these pieces of legislation, and we are reporting from time to time to the relevant authorities that we should report to in terms of that. And then, finally, down this list, and not exclusively, the professional vulnerable groups, the various pieces of legislation which we are implementing, not just like the few of them, the Child Justice Act of 2008, the Sexual Offenders Act, the Sexual Offenders and Related Matters Amendment Act, as well as the Maintenance Act. So those are some of the sources of mandates which we currently carry. In addition to those mandates, we also have policy mandates, and really, in a nutshell, we wanted to focus our attention to the delivery of outcome 3 of government, which is all people in South Africa are and feel safe. The minister found a delivery agreement in terms of which outcome 3 is implemented. That is the executive authority that is responsible for the JSPS cluster coordination. As the chair is supported by the department, and we then as a department do the coordination of the work of the cluster to ensure that people in South Africa are and feel safe. Excuse me. Within this environment, there are quite a number of departments that are involved, including but not limited to the Home Affairs, Correctional Services, the FPA, its own right, outside the Department of Justice, the Department of Revenue, State Security, and other departments that we work with very closely to produce the outputs that feed into outcome 3. So that is just the issue relating to the JCPS cluster. Then on the transformation of the judicial system, there are quite a number of initiatives that we deal with that have been given by our minister to deal with. The transformation of the judicial system is one of them, and under the transformation of the judicial system, the institutional reforms to strengthen the Office of the Chief Justice is but one of those initiatives. The second one is the rationalization of the superior courts. Now, in talking to the strengthening of the Office of the Chief Justice, we did report this at some point. I can't recall whether before this Honorable House, and if we haven't, there has been quite significant developments around this issue. The Office of the Chief Justice now has no kind of capacity in terms of staff support that we've seconded and or appointed on a seconded basis to the Office of the Chief Justice. team to develop the cover of the encouragement within the Office of the Chief Justice as we speak. But what is very important is that during the course of last year, the Office of the Chief Justice was proclaimed as the department, and therefore it is operating at that level as we speak today. And therefore the type of support that we are doing is twofold. The first aspect of that support is getting the office to take off the ground and to have all the accounting systems that it requires to have any related issues affected by this proclamation. The second aspect is related to define the work that must go into the Office of the Chief Justice. And then the third element is then redefining the department, what will be left as soon as the work that goes to the Office of the Chief Justice goes. So insofar as the work that is currently underway, it's the development, the drafting of the Constitutional 18th Amendment, then that seeks to affirm the Chief Justice as the head of the judiciary with the responsibility of developing and monitoring the implementation of commands and standards for exercising the judicial functions. Okay, there are a whole range of other initiatives that are currently happening, including, amongst others, the development of the Judicial Services Commission, of course, in partnership with ourselves, of the judges' registering interests, which has to go through this honorable house and be finalized as soon as the house is able to. On the rationalization aspects, the bills have been finalized for all intents and purposes. We've done everything technically possible to ensure that the bills are ready to be heard by this honorable house. We remain available as soon as we are called upon to do so, as soon as the bills are formally introduced into this house. We are also in the process of realigning the magisterial districts with municipal districts. We continue to implement programs that seek to correct the old magisterial districts that were built on Holland's former Republic of South Africa territory. The transformation intends giving the adequate jurisdiction of these courts to function as fully fledged courts. In addition, currently there is a review that has commenced on the civil justice system to try and ensure that whilst we've done the review of the criminal justice system that has given us outcomes that we're currently implementing under the JCPS cluster, we are not leaving out the civil justice system because it is as cumbersome and as problematic as we are experiencing with the criminal justice system, to be able to ensure that people get a holistic package of access to justice. We can't just fix the one to the exclusion of the other, and this exercise is intended to ensure that the civil justice system is also reviewed and is not as user-friendly as it can reasonably be for people of South Africa, all of them, to be able to access it without too many problems. But there are few things that we are happening with all this happening. Amongst others, immediate legislative interventions that have been implemented to address some of the process gaps that are currently experienced by the lower courts, that is already being undertaken, but also we are doing some work in terms of the review of the Magistrates Court Act, which, as we can see, the 1944 legislation is going to bring us in line with today's realities. We've done quite a lot of work also in terms of the extension of civil jurisdictions. I think that's why the regional courts were extended to deal with issues of civil jurisdiction, including divorces. I think it was the 9th of August 2010. We are also interested in the Human Claims Court. This campaign has resulted in quite a few years, as we've and we are working tirelessly to ensure that we achieve that. Now we move to the next section of the presentation, which then deals with our organizational context. Just speaking out very briefly for the members, what are our experiences on the ground and what are we working towards in terms of driving those experiences to positive outcomes as we move forward. We define them in very simple terms as four: the financial, internal processes, customers, as well as people issues. And we are saying if we can make a change in our organization, it will be in these areas. We are dealing specifically with the financial aspects of our organizational context. It doesn't affect us very much to only complain and say we do not have sufficient budget. But in the reality that everybody is aware, the country is not insulated from the international experiences that every other country is going through in terms of just the economic downturn. We are grateful that we've relatively done well under the circumstances. It could have been worse. We could have been, as civil servants, been asked to take pay cuts, but we're not done yet, and I hope we won't get there. What is critical, therefore, is that how is the department going to make do with the limited resources that are currently at our disposal? During this presentation, the other separate presentation that we speak specifically to the issues of budget, on how are we going to manage the hours that we have been given. Overall, the impact is not actually the actual reduction, but it's the impact of the budget has been that we are seeing an experience of a reduction of 2.1 billion during the LTF period. It's not a complaint necessarily, it's just the reality that we find ourselves in. These are the direct impact on the key programs that we need so desperately to revitalize. One of those is information and communication technology. We need to invest in IT because we have not done so over a period of time because of amongst others, not only, but amongst others, lack of adequate resources to invest in ICT. And we need to start doing that because if we have to drive the transformation that we need in our business, we are going to have an effective and a working ICT in the department. The impact, a direct impact that we are feeling as a result of lack of investments. We have aging servers as well as aging infrastructure, just ICT infrastructure. A number of our servers are out of warranty and they are posing right now operational risks, not just for us at head office, but throughout our business, and it's a risk that we need to manage very, very sensitively and effectively. We also have inadequate business continuity plan. There is funding left on the business continuity plan, but that funding doesn't come through in this current year. I think it comes through in the 2012-2013 financial year. So this year we are doing what we've done last year, which is investing in some elements of the business continuity plan and not the totality of that, because the budget only comes through in the new financial year, which is 2013. Of course, we are experiencing a very growing network as well, which has a direct impact on the turnaround on delivery of our services. Of course, we are engaging the community through, of course, national treasury to try and turn our situation around. And where we are seeing opportunities for savings, we are investing in buying hardware at this stage and ensuring that those warranties that are those servers that are out of warranties were addressed. But it's almost on an ad hoc basis given the current financial situation that we find ourselves in. We also still have financial experiencing what we might call seriously exorbitant security costs. Our business is growing, therefore the need for security is equally growing. We've had various incidents. have had incidences in our courts, which is very unfortunate, and we need to remember trying to address these issues as quickly as we are able to. So we've got security in place, but the outcome of our courts that are currently not secured as we speak. We are also just talking to the South African National Defence Force to see if they cannot assist us with security. It's a matter that we are very far down the line in terms of just negotiating certain interventions that they can bring to bear in assisting us in ensuring that we secure our own infrastructure within the security cluster a lot better than what we have been doing before. So it's a cost that is quite reasonable compared to what we are currently paying. We can't report on the outcome of those though until they have been concluded. Now, the fundamental matter, which is the third point, infrastructure and expansion of justice services, I think it's one area where we are very concerned. The demand of services is growing at the rate which we are not able to meet in terms of providing the relevant infrastructure for those services. We still see to be a challenge, of course, of addressing the historical imbalances relating to court infrastructure. But that's not just that. It's that plus additional areas that we have to continue to solve as we move forward. However, with all of that, we are also experiencing escalation of infrastructure costs above inflation, which means that the cash flows for building new infrastructure is often insufficient and results in postponement of some of the critical infrastructure because we must have cash flow once we start building. So it's not necessarily as a result of a direct budget cut, but obviously the budget has to be aligned and take care of the inflation, and what we are saying is that because of that disjuncture, we are experiencing those problems. There are other problems, of course, that impact and influence our work program, our infrastructure program, quite directly as well. There is also a need to balance additional costs that we have to put in place to with the maintenance as well as accessibility programs of the existing costs. I think in the recent past we've heard that court infrastructure is experiencing serious strain, and I think it is the nerve of us to say we will look at all courts, but we have to keep that balance between what we build and keeping those infrastructure working, because if we don't maintain, then we're going to lose that infrastructure and it will cost us much more into the future. Therefore, sometimes we also find ourselves in a situation where we use infrastructure budget to cater for immediate accommodation needs. And this is the biggest problem that the government is currently experiencing. We are growing our numbers in infrastructure, accommodation, and we don't turn that into use arrangements instead of building. So those are both challenges. Of course, the first thing is that we do engage our colleagues in National Treasury. Those issues are provided for in our budget. But of course, they can't give us what they have. They can't give us more than what they can afford. In addition, we are engaging with potential partners to see if people cannot come to the table to assist with the infrastructure backlog that we are facing. Excuse me. Moving again, still within the financial challenges, but moving to litigation against the state, we've experienced, at least over the last year and a few years before, we've experienced an increase in litigation against the state. Rather, this is, in a nutshell, not necessarily a bad thing, because the growing litigation is as a result of a progressive realization of people's rights and therefore being able to go and litigate in instances where they feel their rights have been infringed upon. And therefore, as a result, we are saying, in real terms, this is an increase that we need to start catering for. There is obviously opportunistic litigation that we experience, but we also do not have a properly coordinated approach towards litigation, and that is what we are challenging ourselves as the department to work on, and our strategy amongst others begins to try and direct us towards that direction. We are also saying that whilst we are talking about alternative dispute resolution, it is not very clear at what stage do those systems have to kick in, and we need to redefine that framework quite clearly, such that it is clear at what stage do we go in mediation as opposed to going into court and fighting it all out. So there are various interventions that we are putting in place to curb spiraling cost of litigation. Amongst others, this is one that is going to be very interesting, because we do expect that we will receive a lot of objection to, but we will have to engage with the process anyway. Is the development of a policy framework for the efficient management of state litigation capacity to enhance the office of the state attorney by increasing resources, and these resources specifically we are talking about human capital in the state attorney's offices, but also financial as well as infrastructure. We are going to have to look at business process mapping just to ensure that we do align with things that we do not need wasted in the system, but also identify the type of talent and skills that we need in specific areas in the state attorney's offices. The preparation and implementation of a standardized fee structure for the payment of private counsel, and this is the area that I was saying it's going to be a very difficult engagement process, but we will have to engage with it anyway. Then the development of an alternative dispute resolution process to either avoid litigation when it is possible or enable a settlement at a much quicker pace. Now we move to internal processes. The just a last bit on the financial challenges. There are other areas which have been severely affected by some of the budget constraints that we find ourselves in. The increase in the establishment of lower courts, as well as providing the judiciary, especially the magistrates, with adequate tools. Because of the budget constraints, this area remains a challenge which we remain seized with. The expansion of the support personnel in courts, in particular the interpreters, the finance managers in courts, the supply chain managers, as well as other personnel that support the court system, we need to really deal with this, particularly those who are performing the court's legal function. In particular, those who are dealing with default judgments, court orders, warrants of execution, and the like. This is because, not only because we are responding to the pressure that we are receiving from outside, but it can be correct that default judgments remain undone when the judgment has been, when the process is, because the processes are delayed by lack of capacity, and that's why we are saying we are going to try and capacitate this as much as we are able to. Without going through the entire slide, I would just look at the very last bullet, because this is an area that we have not covered in sufficient detail. The enhancement of the constitutional development programs. There are quite a number of programs that have taken a backseat that we want to bring back to stream, which have everything to do with constitutional development. Part of this is we are rebranding our department as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development in the way that we deal with issues of human rights, insofar as our responsibilities are concerned, recognizing that there's a South African Human Rights Commission. We realize that there are certain things that we as the Department of Justice must do, and we're saying we will invest in that. As a result, we have a strong communication strategy that we've recently adopted. It's not only this, it's just additional information that will help us towards the rebranding and how we package the information and the rights and the activities that we will be doing in this current financial year. Then we move to internal processes. Under internal processes, there are several areas that we deal with financial management. done internal processes. And I might indicate perhaps before I talk to this issue that the key reason why we've looked at our business this way is that we've looked at the annual report for last year and the previous years, and we've thought the biggest areas where we are failing are our internal processes. And we want to address that as a specific initiative. So moving to the second paragraph of the presentation, the department in 2008 had five issues that we were qualified on: third party funds, assets, leases, liens, irregular expenditure. These we dealt with, last year we were qualified on third party funds as well as on irregular expenditure, and we are working flat out to address these two issues very specifically. We are research according to our own planning and what that we are doing. We are research to get an unqualified audit for 2012-2013 financial year. On the issue of fraud and corruption,
the verification process is too long,
directly with Homer Sons inside of Victor Clarence. The other project allows us to verify the data claims of the beneficiaries and ensure that we are paying the right people instead of paying people who have not been verified. And I believe the project is going well. There are some risks, but we are dealing with those risks. When we acquired this year, going forward, is that we are going to prioritize the master's services. We are going to rebrand the master's services. We are going to build a very strong service ethos around the master's service. We are finalizing the service standards right now that are going to apply in the master's services. We are doing the process re-engineering in the master's office to ensure that we have that. When we provided last time on the government fund, members were also given an indication of how the ICT systems work in the master's environment. We are going to capitalize on that now to begin to deliver the services as we move forward. Excuse me. Then we move to the maintenance issues. Maintenance has been one of those areas that has been the department for a long time now. It has been an area that we need to address, we've identified it as much. What we are doing this year is we're also prioritizing the maintenance environment. We've developed a whole project plan of how we are going to run it out, and we believe that we will be able to run the maintenance project this year, and obviously whatever we are not able to conclude, that will be a challenge beyond our control, because things that are within our control are completely out of plan. When we have our annual plan in April, we will also submit as a supporting document the project plan around the masters, the project plan around the maintenance as we move forward. But the draft plan are already available, and we can share them with the committee if requested to do so. So what I'm going to do amongst others is just incorporating the support of the maintenance program as we move in the next 5 years. Starting this year, we are going to investigate the possibility of offering certain services over weekends, because most people who are maintenance applicants are working parents who should have been using a day at work for maintenance money. And we are going to explore that in every facet of the work that we do. Of course, we are going to include the maintenance in the investigators. It's not only the procurement, but it's not the plan. Who are going to do these investigations over weekends so that we close up as many cases as we are able to do so. Where possible, and I'm saying only where possible, we will introduce maintenance, mediation in the maintenance disputes where possible. And of course, we want, if possible, that all maintenance beneficiaries have bank accounts so that they don't go to court to queue, and we're facilitating that. Using the media of our communication strategy, we are going to go out and reach the public, both on print media and electronic media, to tell the people where and how and to access maintenance services without necessarily having to come to court. So what we will do at least, we'll end up with a very small number of people in court, and not to cut down that number as much as possible as we move forward. This will help us in two ways. The first is that it will begin to deal with the queues in less time, but it will also reduce the exposure to fraud and corruption that we are currently experiencing. But most importantly, it will help us reduce our security risk because of monies that are currently kept in court. And what we are saying is that we want that to be done slightly differently as a model. There are a few things that are going to be quite visible for members to see. There is a lot of maintenance and other things that we are going to start this project this year. And we are going to ensure that the frontline staff that are dealing with the maintenance are qualified people, excuse me, are not similar people than what we've been experiencing in our course, where from Afghan people are very, very Kenyan people, because Malawian people who are there, so the ones who make decisions there and then, are sick people there and then, instead of waiting and allowing people to keep coming back to the courts for answers. We are also going to be demanding of all our managers, like the ex-co here has brought into the idea, that for every court, anyone who is responsible, either for the court or the maintenance, their telephone number, their phone number, their face, their picture is in every court, so that people who feel frustrated by the process can call everybody. In other words, can call the floor manager, the court manager, can call the maintenance chief director, can call myself if need be, so that we can resolve the problems almost instantaneously. Business process improvement, we are also going to start introducing that. In fact, since our last strategic review, there is research that is already going through business process review, so that we ensure that the processes support the work that we do. Then I'd like to speak not in detail, because again here on the case backlog project, there is going to be a specific project plan that deals with the case backlogs. We have received quite different allocations over the period. In relation to the allocations that we have received and the outputs that we are getting, we are kind of very concerned that we could have a better output than the current outputs that we've been receiving. And I think our priority is on the case backlog project. We are not only monitored through our own strategy, but we are also monitored at a cluster level to ensure that we improve this. Our targets that are contained in the group that we have created, we are currently testing within the parameters of the targets, within the backlog targets. However, we believe we can do better in this area of work. Although, from our current perspective, historically, when we were writing the strategy, we always spoke about some programs as though we, as the Department of Justice, we found those programs ourselves. We are defining what it is that we will do for case backlogs to a case backlog project to be effective. We exclude, therefore, the actual sitting and the actual hours spent in court by the judiciary as well as the prosecution. We focus on what do we do as the Department of Justice to facilitate that work takes place. And that is the role of the Department as we have defined it on page 21, the last paragraph. We have finalized quite a number of protocols to try and facilitate the implementation of the criminal justice system review results. Those protocols that we put in place are aimed at ensuring that cases are finalized quicker, the bail issues are resolved quicker, and bail as well as those more sensitive issues that we've been grappling with as a cluster. And I can say this, that as a cluster we agree on most things except when it comes to bail. And it's not that we are saying that should not happen. All we are saying is that the discomforts are only that people who commit serious crime should be dealt with and perhaps should be kept in correctional facilities as instead of being released on bail. So that is one area that we will be dealing with as we move forward. But there is a bail protocol in place, there is a reduction of regional court case backlog, sorry about that, Chair. From the chemistry of directors protocol, court screening protocol, as well as legal aid protocol. Now, these protocols have now been of great help to facilitate the work of the cluster. Again, on the customer services, we are currently finalizing the service charter as well as the service standards so that we are able to order the services that we are delivering and the effectiveness thereof to the people that we are rendering the service. We have worked as the Executive Committee of the Department approved that work, we've received quite a number of drafts. clearly defined. We want to also improve our likely respondents for the queries that are either raised through the presidential hotline or our own system of raising queries by the public. We want to improve that. So we are capacitating this area quite significantly as we move forward. Now we move to issues of people, and this is where this strategy will either be a success or otherwise fail. It's really on people, because it's largely based on people, having recognized what I said around systems much earlier in the presentation. Certainly the systems will be there, I'm not suggesting they will be, but all I'm saying is that people are going to ensure that the information that goes into the system is accurate, the information that goes out of the system is therefore useful and credible. And we are struggling in some areas, not all, but in some areas of our business with that. People challenges are roughly centered around shortage of skills in critical areas. And those critical areas, I can very clearly articulate what they are. They are in finance, they are in risk management, they are in internal audit, as well as in strategy. We are building and building that take a bit of time, building this capacity. I can perhaps just report that in finance, as the 1st of April, we will be at least having more chief directors, at least three of them, probably even three and a half if you add a director into that mix. So we are making progress, albeit not at the pace we would wish to have it. And really, the challenge has been filling vacancies quicker, has been limited by the availability of people who are interested in taking up some of the positions. These positions are certainly needed to, we've had to raise the card at least more than once. And in fact, every other position in the department, we've had to re-advertise at least more than once. And I'm talking about advertising publicly. And sometimes, even when we headhunt, we've had to do the process more than once to be able to get people. So we're excited about the new people who will be coming in, but they're not normally enough to meet the need in the finance environment. We are also seriously challenged, and I don't want to say this, on the issue of women and people with disabilities. And this is an area that we prioritize. Our current performance agreements talk to that, but the reality is just that people are just not applying. We have had to say we can't keep pushing appointments any further, because if we do, we won't have a department by the time we get the right women to come and run the department. So we've got to balance these priorities. Of course, there are several areas in our business where there is no productivity, and we are very concerned with that. And so this re-engineering, HR has just gone undergone some level of re-engineering at systems level. And what we are now doing is to go to the re-engineering in terms of people, where the people are matched to the position. And that exercise has just been completed at least at the systems level. And the next level, we are going to start in this new financial year. In addition to this, what we've done is we've looked at, not everywhere in the department is there a lack of capacity. There are areas where there's excess capacity. And what we're doing is we are reprioritizing that excess capacity in the manner that is suggested on slide 24. What we've done is that we've identified four key areas that we need serious capacitation on. The compliance unit, because we are struggling with compliance, and therefore we need people to come in and do that. And I saw some of these people are already in the organization, but they are sitting in all corners of the organization, and we need to just put them together and move them into strategy so that they help us with compliance. Under labor relations, we've got quite a lot of capacity of legally trained people in the department who are all over the department that can be more utilized if they were brought together in assisting us with labor relations. Contract management falls under procurement, and members will recall that this is an area where we are the weakest, and we've identified the capacity, and we are in the negotiations process to move that capacity to to go and support us in contract management, as well as, of course, in research and development. We absolutely have to deal with our relations with Chapter 9 institutions. It's a critical area. The department is currently working towards the development of the constitutional development branch, and therefore that's why we put this issue under people, less under customers, because in building this constitutional development capacity, we will then be able to engage at a much more strategic level with our Chapter 9 institutions instead of just the engagements being technical engagements. We will continue, of course, to support and protect Chapter 9 institutions by facilitating their budgetary processes as well as the financial arrangements of transfers that are set out in the Treasury regulation. We'll also be promoting proposals that generally emanate from these institutions, whether it's the Human Rights Commission or the Public Protector in particular. We will evaluate and investigate legislative amendments where they are requiring these to be undertaken. And then, of course, promoting communication between the Chapter 9 and government in general, where this need has been identified. In our work, we've been heartened by the contribution of donors. Donors have been absolutely wonderful by giving us and continuing to support our business moving forward. And we do want to acknowledge them and commit ourselves to clear government so that we can get even more donors to come and support our cause. Without going through each one of the activities are set out on slide 26. Now, back to the strategic goals that are set out in our strategic document. That's why I won't be too long, because we've covered the detail in our organizational context. Excuse me. The first strategic goal really talks about the increased accountability, effectiveness and efficiency of the Department of Constitutional Development, and really goes to the heart of Program 1, which is administration. Here, well, on this slide, we're also just showing that each goal is linked to the next, but most goals are linked to outcome 3 of the JCPS cluster. And really, I want to speak to that as I move to strategic goal number 4. Strategic goal number 2 deals with the improved effectiveness and efficiency of delivery of justice services, and that talks to the processes that I've already spoken to. The third goal talks to the transformed legal services to protect and advance the interest of government as well as the citizens and promote constitutional development. The fourth goal really is one of coordination. We've put it here because delivery a grant is really truly a full-time job. It has to be funded, all those things that must be done, that we commit to, the targets that we commit to, must be funded, and we kind of are not included as part of our objective as a strategic goal in our strategy. How does blocks then come together in the end? If you look at strategic goal number 1, we assign strategic goal number 1 is linked to the strategic goal number 4 in the following sense. If we are totally ineffective administration wise, we are not going to be able to meet outcome 3. Issues of fraud and corruption are output of the delivery agreement, and there is a direct relationship and a direct link between those two. All programs of strategic goal 4 are going to be delivered predominantly through program 2, which is court services, because all the work that must happen in courts. And then finally, when we are talking about the transparent legal services, that also fits into strategic goal 4 in the sense that on legal services is highly exorbitant, and we are trying to push down those costs, but also cut any possibility of fraud and corruption as we move forward. Key priority areas, I've already spoken to those key priority areas. I'm just emphasizing the point on slide 28. In fact, slide 28, 29, as well as slide 30, in a nutshell, talk to this prioritization that I've already spoken to. The top three objectives have been identified for a coordinated effort at improving service delivery and the management of the department during 2011-2012 financial year, even though the strategy is for a five-year horizon. So we're talking to new audit qualification, improved delivery of maintenance services, as well as improved delivery of master's services. Under the new audit qualification, we've hyperlinked this slide with the initiatives that we are going to be doing in the department to ensure that we turn the corner. I have already indicated that we are saying we want to see a clear audit by 2012-2013. In doing that, there are a number of specific things that we are going to do. We'll develop, implement, and monitor effective controls that will help us in managing our affairs as a department. We'll implement accounting systems that will allow the department to produce financial statements for third-party funds as well as the criminal asset recovery account. And I wish to pause here and perhaps explain this point just in brief detail. Many of you recall that we did not do financial statements for the third-party funds last year. And the reason why we struggled with that was just the availability of information, credible information, to enable us to do that. We issued a tender in terms of which we were seeking assistance from the market to come and assist us in that process. After going through the evaluation process, it was then identified that that process was not going to result in the outcome that we had anticipated we would receive. We then adopted that tender process. We re-drafted our specifications anew, and we reissued the tender. We finalized the tender quite late in the year, but the people are already on site working. They've presented to us the model of how they're going to do the work. On paper, I must say this, on paper, in terms of the presentation, it looks like we will be able to meet our targets. If we are just not going to meet our targets at the time at which we had anticipated we will meet our targets of producing the a credible set of financial statements for the third-party funds, we will produce the VAT account financial statements. It may probably be slightly later, but probably by 3 months. I think the target is September 2011. But we will produce the financial statements. So we are excited at the possibility at this stage. We are also working on the implementation of the human resources system that will improve the management of leave as well as performance. Members will recall that we had serious issues of leave last year. We've really largely overcome leave issues. And as I say overcome, maybe it sounds like a strong word, but we've worked very effectively around the management of leave. We've got proper reports now that are dealing with leave. Are there still going to be issues that the Auditor General will find? Potentially, maybe. But this is one of the areas that are within our line of sight, and we're working actively on it. Again, on the issues of appointments, we are working on appointments to try and support the organization, because we can't deliver the strategy without people. Addressing our own internal processes which exist where there is a culture of lack of discipline in terms of enforcing the current existing controls as well as processes that are in place. When talking to the issues of maintenance, now I'm just going to drill down into some level of detail. The service improvement plan that we had already spoken to will assist us greatly in this area of work. of the capability of startup services we will look at very actively. We'll also be upgrading skills of frontline staff. We'll improve management of customer complaints. We'll be launching, as I've already indicated, improved data in the awareness campaign, and generate business processes that seek to analyze opportunities for fraud and corruption, but also minimize time wastage. When necessary, of course, we'll be making recommendations for alignment of legislation. We are not saying that will happen for sure. It will go through the normal process of legislative identification and submission to the leader of government business approval. Again, on the issue of the masters, I've covered most of these issues. Perhaps what I've learned, I would just cover on slide 31 is the training program, the intense training program on customer services that our people in the masters environment are going to have to go through to be able to turn the corner. So this really actually talks to the issues around our indicators on our objectives. And now we go according to programs. In the African program, we start with program one. In the program one, we first talk to the issue of targets, and we're confirming that our targets may not be absolutely set as yet in the strategy, but the own performance plan that we are working on. We have finalized the start targets for the year. Then the end of program is to manage the department and to develop policies and strategies for efficient administration of justice, as well as to provide centralized support services in certain areas. Because there are those areas that we wish to decentralize for better effectiveness, and those we will identify as and when we continue to run the business. I will now talk to the issue of budget, since to indicate the allocation that has been made there over a period from 2007 to 2009, which is historic allocation, and also recognizing the allocation that has been done from 2010 right up to 2013 and 2014. And what we are saying, we are correcting this department too. Before this honourable quality is that we are going to manage these resources supported by the institutional arrangements that have already been put in place by the department in the institutions of EXCO, in the institutions of the subcommittees of EXCO, supported by, of course, the external auditors as well as internal auditors, as well as the audit committee. All those systems are working. Perhaps I can't speak for the external auditors, which is the Auditor General's Office, because they are there to keep us honest, but we believe all of them working together are assisting us in ensuring that the department performs. What we've done on slide 34 onwards is we've linked the program together with the objectives, and we are indicating what those objectives are at a higher level, salary level, because the details we've already spoken about. So for objective one, it's increased compliance with prescripts to achieve a sustained and unqualified audit. So what is the indicator for us there? It's an unqualified audit opinion. The second objective is improved management of fraud and corruption cases in the department. What is the indicator there? It's increased criminalization of fraud and corruption cases. Basically, either people out of the system or in the criminal justice system. The third objective is improved human resources and service delivery. What we're looking at is the percentage of human resources services that meet full service standards. I've already indicated that we are finalizing the development of the service standards, and those service standards will tell us whether human resources is delivering or not. In other words, we are delivering or not. And then the fourth objective workings of the national system. I don't know very much to worry about why we are referring to systems as minor. There are those systems that we are still at the development stage where we are still using minor systems. It's not ideal, but it's our reality at this stage. We are wanting to migrate towards automation, but as we speak, there are those areas that we are saying, what we are saying is that even where there are minor systems, we want to ensure that those systems are supported by proper controls as we move forward. Then finally, and this is the one I really would wish to speak to, objective 5, increase percentage of outstanding CRC victims with access to reparations as per the TRC recommendations. And before the members really look at us with a beating brow, what we are saying here is that we want to achieve 100% of everyone who was a victim of the process to benefit from the TRC processes, 100%. Our experience has been on the ground that we have really struggled getting people. It was only last week that we made a major breakthrough. We're excited about the major breakthrough that we've made, and we are quite happy to see, given the major breakthrough, it is quite possible that within the strategic period, we are going to be able to achieve 100% performance in this area. But having said that, we are still developing the strategy. That was our reality, and that is why we had put 90% of our outstanding cases of living beneficiaries and 30% of those of deceased beneficiaries to be dealt with within the next 5 years. Under the court services, which is now program 2, which I said program 2 will help us deliver most of the cluster responsibilities that we have. In addition to that, this program seeks to facilitate the resolution of criminal, civil and familial disputes by providing accessible, efficient and quality administrative support to courts as well as the management of court facilities. This program represents around 70% of our departmental budget and is the core of the delivery of justice service, at least in our views. The several spending pressures have been identified within this program. The one key one is the lack of resources, adequate list resources to implement the Child Justice Act. We are preparing a separate report on the Child Justice Act. I think we are finalizing the annual report, which is a separate from this document, which will be indicating some of the challenges we are experiencing, but some of the progress that we are making in that area. We have spoken to issues of infrastructure earlier. It also comes back here in insufficient capacity of the courts contributing to service delivery challenges. And in line, this talks to infrastructure challenges that we are currently experiencing. Of course, the last talks to the capex budget that we need to deal with. Again, this slide indicates the allocations that we have received over the years and allocations that we are likely to receive in the next few years from the Department of National Treasury. I think the slide is self-explanatory and I will not go through it in detail. So what are the objectives then for Program 2 with that amount of money that has been allocated to it? The sixth objective, and if I said the sixth, it's because it's a continuation of all the objectives. We said we have 17 objectives, so it's a continuation. Sixth, improved coordination of the JCPS cluster towards the delivery of outcome 3. Objective 7, improved finalization of activities in support of the outputs of outcome 3. And then objective 8, improved delivery of maintenance services, and we've spoken to that at length. Our objective one, increase protection of the rights of vulnerable groups and the indicators are there, so I haven't gone to them. Objective 10, increased access to justice by underserviced communities, and this area is the area that we said we are experiencing some challenges in terms of infrastructure development in those communities. And then objective 11, improved functionality of justice service points, and I'd like to just explain what we mean by the functionality of justice service points. In a nutshell, basically, we want to try and establish a standard that everywhere where a South African or a person in South Africa who goes to court sees the same level of service throughout the country. And we are going to spend the next 5 years investing in developing these services and implementing these services standards throughout our court environment. And then service delivery at court being the final one. Then we move to state legal services, which is program 3. Really, in a nutshell, Program 3 provides legal and legislative services to government. It supervises the administration of estates and insolvent estates, as well as liquidation of juristic persons, as well as the registration of trusts and management of the Guardian Fund. It's quite a limited program, but what we were doing was we were doing the alignment aspect, and we've broken down all of this into individual objectives as well. The budget is again self-evident there, but we are also supported very much by our donor partners in achieving this area of work. Now, going according to objectives, these are the objectives that we will be expected to meet in the next 5 years. Improve service delivery of medical services starting with this year. The objective there, we want 100% of the medical service points to be fully capacitated and automated by 2015 and 2016. And I think that this target is within reach because we've capacitated quite significantly, ICT-wise, in the master's services. Objective 14, increased efficiency in the provision of services to beneficiaries of government fund, trust, as well as insolvent estates. Again, the indicator is self-evident. And then, promote constitutional development and strengthen participatory democracy to ensure respect for the fundamental human rights. This is an area which we are saying is relatively new for us. It's an area that we will be developing in more detail as we finalize the branch called constitutional development, because those programs will be delivered under constitutional development. And then the provision of legal services to state organs, we're grappling with some of the challenges around us in terms of service delivery, but this is work in progress. We are already doing that. We just have to obviously augment capacity so that we improve the quality as well as the quantity of services that we render to government. Objective 17, improved policy and legislative work for effective and efficient delivery of justice services. The legislative program is very much detailed in the strategies that we want to achieve and where we want to achieve it, and I think it is achievable. We are quite confident that we will meet objective 17 almost hands down, and maybe I'm stretching it a bit, but we will meet objective 17 because we have quite a clear plan for it. As articulated in the strategy. Chair, then coming to the conclusion, again, I want to reiterate that we've thought about our business long and hard. There are areas that are a challenge for us. First, we have to articulate areas our objectives or our targets as required by the framework. We believe that we will work with our colleagues in government to assist us do that where we are unable to do that by ourselves. We are confident that internal issues, which we define as our environmental context, both internally and externally, we are aware of those and we are going to deal with those. We remain as well guided by this Honourable House as much as is possible, and we are always open to that guidance. Our mandate remains that we drive issues of the Constitution, the legislation, as well as the policy, as I had articulated earlier. We are very cognizant of the challenges and constraints, but we are saying everyone is experiencing a challenge or the other. The question is, how do we turn, as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, those challenges into positives that this country can see that we have a Department of Justice in action. We are committing that at the end of this month, we will, at the coming month, April, we will be turning our annual performance plan that will be supported by the maintenance project plan, the master's project plan, the backlog document, and all other supporting documents that will be indicating in more precise terms when and how we plan to achieve each of the areas that we are going to achieve for 2011-2012 aspect of this strategy. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Forest of hands, all of you. Mr. Jeffrey, Mr. Swart, Dr. Ambrosini, Dean Smuts, Schopestole, Schaefer, in that, and then Mentor, in that order.
Chair, thanks, and thanks very much to the DG for the presentation. But my difficulty is, you know, when you watch a soap opera, you know exactly where things are from episode to episode. So at the end of this episode, you know what the issues are. If you've been, and then at the well, you can watch soap operas because they're easy to follow, because it's easy knowing what the issues are. These are the outstanding issues. So-and-so is not sure whether they're pregnant or who the father is, so you're going to discover that, whatever, and so on. The difficulty I've got with the Department of Justice's presentation is that it's very difficult following where we are, because you don't pick up from where we left off. You in a sense, give us a whole lot of new indicators and reorder it. So, for example, you know, before we were dealing with key performance indicators, and we even had an input on key performance indicators this year, where the department came. I think DG, you were not there. I think you apologised to say you were changing. You wanted to change key performance indicators. Now we don't have any key performance indicators anymore. We've got objectives. Nobody's come to us to say, look, we didn't want key performance indicators, or we're now, instead of just redoing the key performance indicators, we're doing away with them altogether. We're now going for objectives, and this is how they match up. So it's quite difficult to follow on. I would have thought, you know, with the budget, the money bills process, you know, there was this budgetary review and recommendation report that we adopted in October. I would have thought it would have been useful to have taken that as a starting point to say these were the issues that were raised, this is how far we've gone with them. But instead we've got to sift through all this information that you're giving us. And some of it is more easier to follow than others, but some of it is quite contradictory. So, you know, the third party funds comes up regularly. And there's a long account that the research unit have done which is quite comprehensive on what the history of it is. The last report that we got was that there was going to be a trading entity established. The committee was now told that National Treasury has since advised that the third party fund should be established as a trading entity. You haven't said anything to us about that. Okay? That's where it's really difficult to follow what's going on. And I'm sure it makes it even as difficult for yourselves. So I'm not. We did on the third party fund say we wanted a proper report, but I don't think I haven't seen that report. So there's a lot of issues in our BR budget review recommendation report that we need, quite frankly, we need to have responses to before we can engage with this. There's some stuff, you know, in the budget review process, you complained about two things you've complained about now, and that was IT, and you complained about security of courts. You complained about it again now, and you got us to say to the National Assembly and the House to agree that the committee recommends that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development receive additional funds for 11.1.2 improved security for courts and justice officers. The department reports that it needs additional funding in the amount of $319 million for this. But now, according to Treasury, you never ask them for that money. So, you know, that money was not allocated. Although the department raised this as an issue in its 2010-11 budget presentation and in the 2011-16 strategic plan, it did not make a request for additional funds in its 2011 MTEF. The department in its 2005 MTEF made a total allocation for court security of $295 million, and this is now part of the department's baseline. It is not clear how many courts have benefited from this funding, nor is it clear why the department does not reprioritize funds given the apparent seriousness of the security issue. I'm reading from the budget analysis document, no, it's Julian's document, research unit, page 5. You know, so I'm very confused. I'd much rather be watching a soap opera. You know, the IT issue, this virtual library, it's featured a lot in the documents. You haven't told us anything about the virtual library. I mean, that's IT. So I've got those difficulties, but Chair, the main issues I think are third-party funds, which I'm still confused about, the vacancies and the HR issues. They came up before. You haven't come and given us, it's something we commented on, you haven't come and given us any report. You've already said it's a problem. And you've alluded that the problems are still carrying on, but I mean we were particularly concerned about the vacancy of 25% in the CFO's office. We still, I see, have an acting CFO. I mean, how long has the CFO's position been vacant? You said, but Mr. Johnson was introduced as acting CFO. Okay, all right, but anyway. The 25%, what is the figure now? You're not telling us that. So and then the HR issues, you see, because part of the thing is basically, it's a big department, it's a lot of issues. If it hasn't got the staff working, then it's not going to do the job. So that means, one, fill the vacancies, and two, deal with all the grievance disciplinary matters. There's been no report on that, and there's been no report on the vacancies. You've verbally told us that you're experiencing challenges, but I mean, really, with all this attention on the master's office, I mean, how long have we not had? When did we last have a chief master? I mean, we're going into generations now, and I don't mean the soap opera. But I mean, it's you know, that's the stuff we need information on. The backslogs issue, it's really difficult to work out what's going on because the figures keep getting, you know, again, the scene changes. I mean, the data changes. It's impossible, I must say, from my side, I find it, to follow what's happening. And then just two other issues. Maintenance, which is something that has also been raised a number of times. Who is responsible for maintenance? You know, is the coordination. I keep raising that you've got maintenance investigators from the department, you've got maintenance officers from the NPA. Are they talking to each other? My information is that it is better, but I don't know if it's structurally better, whether there's a structured maintenance project. I'm told that the latest problem now is with regard to the servicing of summonses in Gauteng. So KZN, for example, will have will want to serve on somebody in Gauteng, and there's a backlog, there's a problem, it's not being done. Apparently because your maintenance investigators in Gauteng are overstretched, but the issue would be raised, are they overstretched or are they simply just not using their resources properly? And if you compare the servicing of summons in Durban versus the servicing of summons in Joburg, it seems Durban would be more effective. The TRC regulations, I'm just touching on a few of the points. I mean, one could go into it in more detail. DG, you focused on the issue of tracing the beneficiaries. But what about the regulations, you know? And there's a document that the department submitted to the research unit, progress report on issues arising out of the 2010 State of the Nation address. I can't see a date on it, but I think it was earlier this year. Now, you know, with regard to the regulations for the TRC, government is still working on finalizing the relevant regulations in order for beneficiaries to receive the necessary assistance. Educational assistance. Draft regulations submitted to the Minister of Finance for comment. Medical assistance. The Department of Justice and Constitutional Development has drafted regulations for medical assistance. They were submitted to the Department of Health. Housing assistance. A number of consultative meetings have taken place with the Department of Human Settlements. Currently, the Department of Human Settlements is being engaged for drafting the regulations. Community rehabilitation. A framework for the development of a community rehabilitation model has been developed, and a number of meetings with stakeholders have taken place. A stakeholder workshop is envisaged in the near future to take this matter forward. So this is from your document, okay. How long are we going to have to wait? When are these regulations going to be finalized? You don't tell us. I mean, it's something you deal with the one aspect because there's been developments, but the issue of the regulations, I mean, are we going to be focusing on the grandchildren or the great-grandchildren of the victims? I mean, that's what it's... So it boils down to who's responsible for this. And why are they not acting? And then similarly with maintenance. Who's responsible for maintenance? What are they doing to coordinate? So I think, Chair, let me leave it at that. But I do think that in short, I find it very difficult to follow the input because it's not the same story we had last time. Everything's changed. Okay, so it's difficult to follow up what were the outstanding issues last time and what has been done about them. It's very difficult to follow that. And the concern would still be third-party funds, vacancies, human resources cases, particularly. Let me leave it for that for now. I've got some other questions, but I'll come back later. Otherwise, my colleague, I'm sure, will complain.
All right, DG, would you prefer that we do all the questions and comments before responding, or would you prefer to respond individually? I'm giving you the option to decide.
Thank you, Chair. Because the questions were quite varied, perhaps can we take just this block, because it's quite a number of questions, but going forward maybe we can then condense them, because some of the answers may go to future questions. Thank you, Chair. Thank you very much for the questions. I have a friend here to deal with the questions. I prefer just to deal with broadly the introduction to the answers and then let the team respond. You are quite correct, in your observation. Some of these days, because we are being on that stage, we are probably not even aware of what we haven't come back to report on. The issue that has been raised, there are documents that are readily available. I think I did say that in the presentation that we've had a lot of them, they are part of the presentation, and even though some of them are still in draft. So, I apologize if I was not more express in that. Progress in relation to where we and I think that Robin is quite correct, and there has been progress. It's just that perhaps we don't have to specifically deal with these issues. I'm going to request my colleagues to answer the question or the Islam colleagues can assist them do that. The question is related to the TRC, the regulations, progress, development, and I'm going to request Dr. Divine. I'm comfortable that we've made a lot of progress on it. It doesn't come from perhaps my presentation because we know I can start progress in other areas. On the issues of migrants, I'm going to be assisted by advocate Gina. There will be operational tasks that will be assisted by Johan Johnson. On issues of vacancies, I'm going to be assisted by Mr. Shabalala. And on the virtual library between Advocate Gianna and Mr. Johnson can pick up those issues. The third party trading entity, my colleague Johan Johnson, will deal with that and I will probably assist him. On the issue of objectives, the COO, Dr. DeVere, will speak to objectives versus the key performance indicators between the COO and the chief strategy will assist and deal with that. Thank you very much, Chair.
Sorry, the issue of security of the courts, that's a fundamental issue.
The issue of the security of the courts, I split it between two colleagues, the COO, and on the operational side, on the budget side, and whether or not we disagreed for the 319 million, and how have we been budgeted going forward, I will request my colleague Johan Johnson to speak to those issues. I will oblige and support where there is the lack of clarity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Didi. Thank you, Chair. Just briefly on the issue of KPIs. There are guidelines that were issued by Treasury, and they were published only in August 2010. And we specifically try to follow the guidelines in preparing our strategic plan. If you go to our previous strategic plan and this strategic plan, you'll realize that there are major differences in terms of organization. And this is primarily because of the guidelines that have been issued by Treasury in August 2010. In fact, I would leave a copy with you. I don't think it fundamentally changes the content necessarily, but it's just a matter of reorganization in terms of the guidelines that have been issued. Secondly, on the issue of security, as the chairperson of the Finance and Audit Committee of the Department, I think we met with Treasury early in this new year. In fact, it may have been late last year, when we were motivating for additional funds based on the budget cuts that the Director General referred to as amounting to 2.1 billion over the MTF period. And I think in the inputs we gave to Treasury, my recollection is that the requests for security were included in that. They were included. However, I think the only money we received was mainly on OSD and salary increases. That is my recollection. I think for the benefit of the committee, we will go back to the submissions we made, written submissions we made to Treasury, and maybe submit to the committee for clarification. But with regard to the issue of the TRC in particular,
can I just let them go back and check, because I mean what Treasury is saying is that it's not, and then also the issue that Treasury had was that the money that was already there. Was that they were of the opinion that the department's baseline was large enough to reallocate funds towards this option?
Well, we submit something in writing, Chair, the details, because we were not anticipating this question. But the money that was allocated was really not enough for security. In fact, there have been instances where we were overspending on security, and we have to patch up from other areas simply because of the demands on security services from the department. But I think I would, with your permission, Chair, maybe I would like to submit a written response on the matter and attach the documents we submitted to Treasury, with your permission, Chair. And with regard to the issue of TRC, I take the point that the Honourable Member Jeffries have raised. But I'm happy to report on a number of things. Firstly, I'm happy to report that we now have finalized education regulations. Regulations pertaining to education assistance have been finalized. I think they are going through cabinet committees. And I think I'm expecting that by April, both regulations on education assistance as well as regulation on health matters, on medical assistance, would be approved by cabinet in April and then published for public comment. So we have made major progress, I think, on both education and health. And in April, I think, they should be approved and be released for public comment. I think that is the one thing. On the issue of reparations, we have received a communication from IEC. In fact, we have been working with both IEC, and I think we previously reported that we were working with tracing agents to trace some people, and we're making very minimal progress. But subsequent to that, we approached both Home Affairs as well as IEC. I think Home Affairs did come back to us with a report indicating the number of people deceased. And at that stage, I think they said to us that the number of people who were deceased were about 500 people. But I'm happy to report that we have now received information, because we have engaged the IEC. They gave us information only now on the 23rd of March, saying of the 875 people that we owe money to, they have able to link 579 ID numbers to IEC data. And they have also indicated that they have positively identified address information for 461 cases. Now, unfortunately, we couldn't go further because the IEC then requested that they would like to just focus on elections, because they were saying there's no rundown elections, and then thereafter they will open their databases to us. But I think we have made a huge progress. In fact, once we have finalized this process with IEC, we may even now, as the Director General indicated, revise that target that we have set to add to 100%, because clearly within the next 24 months we should be able to pay people based on education regulations, based on health regulations, and based on the number of people we have identified. But over and above this, we have made progress. We are now engaging the IDT to assist us with community rehabilitation. I think in the next week or so, we should be able to sign a memorandum of understanding with the IDT, basically to enable them, after that contractual arrangement, to release the community liaison officers that they have to just do a needs assessment from all affected communities. That will then enable us to identify further interventions in terms of memorials and so on that should be erected as recommended by the TRC. So I think progress is now much better than we earlier reported, Chair. Thanks very much.
I think Dr. De Vere, the concern that it's not just Mr. Jeffrey, by the way, this is the whole committee, is that pretty soon we're going to find you dealing with beneficiaries who are great-great-grandchildren of people who appear before the TRC. And that's our concern. And if that happens, I mean, God help us. Because then we'd have to ask, what are we doing? And that's unacceptable. We have both a constitutional and a moral imperative here. We don't understand why it's taking this long. We're talking about 500 people, 800. But, Mr. Jeffrey, before I misinterpret you.
No, the same thing. Look, the housing regulations, where are they? The community rehabilitation, the report was still a stakeholder workshop in the near future to take it forward. You've spoken about something else. And then look, I mean, it's as long as they registered to vote, you can type in their ID number and find out where they're registered, where they're living. IEC has a street address, probably, but you can just type in the ID number online and find out, and then make use of community development workers to trace them. I'm disappointed that it takes so many years to discover that. So I appreciate there's some progress, but really it should have happened 10 years ago.
Actually, follow-ups on these, and I think at every instance this must be a standing issue, Dr. Dubier. All right. Is there anything else? Who else is Mr. Johnson?
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. A number of questions was directed to me to assist. The first question relates to vacancies in the office of the CFO. We had a number of consultants working previously in our environment. We stopped the employment. Our currency vacancy rate at the end of February is 24.36%. As the reported, we'll start with filling of senior management positions. The first group of senior managers coming in is on the 1st of April. Is three chief directors, one for budgeting, one for legislative costing, and one for financial transaction and processing, and also director for financial reporting services. In relation to virtual library...
Just raise on the vacancies thing. I mean, last time it was 25%, so really that is just not good enough. I mean, it's gone from 25% to 24%. We raised it as an issue in October. It is now March, end of March. I hear the DG saying, well, there aren't people filling it, but the point we raised last time in the quarterly report is, if the Legal Aid South Africa can manage to have a vacancy, fill up their vacancies, I think it's 97%, in the upper 90s, why can't you? So I think that is a non-report. It's not acceptable. Problems with financial systems with that with a quarter of your staff effectively not there.
In relation to the second question, the virtual library, we started the virtual library project, essentially funding it from the baseline, and it has become a serious cost pressure on our budget. Our estimate is if we want to service the judiciary and the justice staff internally, we need approximately 120 million rand annually to render the service. Our baseline provision over the next 3 years for this service is 195 million. It is 60 million, 65 million, and 70 million. So we need to make a number of tough choices on who have access to the system. In relation to the security at court, we sit with a funding constraint. It was submitted as part of option 3 in our budget and an estimate request to National Treasury. When we've done our costing, we've realized that possibly we need a 10 billion rand injection over the next 3 years for all our needs. But understanding, accepting the economic reality, this department decided to cut down on our request. Our final budget submission was around about 1.8 billion rand over 3 years period, and in that, there was this estimate for security. And I think on the expenditure or the investment in IT in infrastructure, we need to acknowledge your support. Now, in my report later, we will confirm that through your interventions, we managed to get 100 million in the second year of the MTF and 110 million in the third year of the MTF. In essence, opportunity for us to do substantial investment in IT and renewal. Our problem area, I've been assigned, although I'm acting chief financial officer, I've been assigned to go into and work into the third party in fund environment as chief director. For the past 20 years, we haven't produced credible financial statements and deeds of fact. Now we are at the point where we say we need to produce it. We believe we're in a position to do it. As part of capacity at a regional level, we will appoint within the next 6 months 45 additional finance practitioners to assist us with financial management. Just remember, the organization took a decision a few years ago to go to an outsourcing arrangement, a public-private partnership. We've decided in the previous calendar year not to pursue it because essentially of two reasons. One is the affordability, because for us it is a PFMA compliance, but secondly the possible HR implications. So now we challenge to within our own resources to ensure that we adhere to the required standards and remain reporting and fulfill our reporting responsibilities. We were guided, you can check the PFMA. The PFMA is very vague on good guidance on trust funds. There's only one section in the Treasury regulations that guides me to trust funds. So we were engaging Treasury in terms of how do we regularize this PFA arrangement. So based on the advice, we've submitted an application to them to establish a trading entity. Now, we're still waiting. The feedback on whether the application will be successful. But we've also internally, you might be aware of it, we've also looked at why don't we construct similar legislation as we've done for the Guidance Fund. So for us it is area of weakness, and the intention is to there's a dedicated project plan, we truly could come back to you in terms of how we would want to integrate the works of our people in regions and in external service providers, and how do we intend to capacitate our regions so that we try to address this problem. The problem is, in this third party funds arrangement, there is approximately 3 billion rand coming on minimum turnover, and approximately 250,000 maintenance payments on a monthly basis. So yes, we do have a problem with, but from the department side, we've put aside money in this effort, dedicated effort needed to fix this problem, but we can only do it in a regulatory framework or where there's clear guidance and approval by Treasury for the appropriate governance framework for such trust fund arrangements.
Mr. Johnson's confused me more. Are you telling us that the issue of the trading entity is still not resolved? That's what you seem to be telling us. You seem to also be telling us that you're not sure whether you haven't resolved the legislation issue yet, or because you're still saying it, raising it as a possibility. So we really seem to be no different to where we were in October. You don't know what's going on.
Just on the legislation that was raised by Mr. Johnson, we have drafted the bill. There is a draft bill on the table. There are a few outstanding issues that we need to take up with National Treasury. We are hoping to meet with them soon. The DG has indicated that because we have not received a response, if I remember correctly, from National Treasury on the public entity issue, that we should proceed with the bill. We have been waiting and not proceeding with the bill because of the public entity issue that we have raised with National Treasury.
I thought we were told that legislation was not needed, that the public-private partnership was being mothballed, and the way forward, the way to go, was the trading entity. Now we're still being told we're getting legislation.
May I try and clarify? those things were all indeed said by us, and we apologize for them having caused a confusion. What we said was that we were looking at the possibility of drafting legislation, which we did. But the two do not coexist. In other words, the third part, the trading entity and the bill are almost two interventions aimed at addressing the same thing. And therefore, if you do one, you don't necessarily need to do the other. And that is why, so there were basically both options, and maybe we were not very clear in how we had explained this thing. So in fact, we did say, when perhaps informally between ourselves and the member, we did indicate this little difficulty. But in terms of the approval, the setting up of the trading entity is not something that we can do all by ourselves. We need support from our colleagues, and we are aware, I am aware that meetings have been held to look at those outstanding issues between ourselves and National Treasury to assist us with a decision either way, because the two interventions have been done in preparation for us getting into a new end state. So if that information has confused this House, we do apologize for that. Thank you.
It's not an informal thing. It's our formal report that we adopted as this committee and then the House, page 16. Previously, the committee, October 26, previously the committee was told that there was a need for legislation to clarify the legal status of third-party funds. This would allow the department to report separately. I'm paraphrasing. The committee was now told, that's October, that the National Treasury had since advised that the third-party fund should be established as a trading entity. Committee is of the view that it needs additional information on this. So it's a formal thing. It's what you've told us in the committee, nothing informal. And you're telling us different things. Okay? We were told this time last year, you need legislation. When you came to us in October, you told us, no, we don't need legislation anymore. Okay? We need a trading entity. Now you're telling us, no, we do need legislation. Bottom line, you don't know what's going on as department. And it's you're going to carry on getting qualified audits. I don't see how you can hope not to have a qualified audit next year if you don't know how to manage it.
Let's make this point very quickly while you're preparing your answer. Honourable members, please remember we have the whole day ahead of us. All right? With the exception perhaps of the Honourable Dean Smuts and Steve Swart and Mr. Ambrosini, they belong to the ad hoc committee. So I'm being deliberately liberal with Mr. Jeffrey because this is a crucial point. So it's not like you won't have an opportunity to raise the issues that you want. DG?
Chair, I do not wish to add anything any further. I just want to extend our apology if we've confused the members. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'll just maybe respond to a few issues that have been raised in relation to court-related matters. But just firstly, maybe just to add to the information that Mr. Johnson has given with regard to the virtual library, it is indeed our intention to invest more in this area, because currently there are a number of challenges of maintaining the existing library services of courts that we are experiencing. And so the move towards a more IT system, it is something that I think we are sort of recommending as a department. But of course, this is also a matter that we are also dealing jointly with the judiciary, assisted by the Office of the Chief Justice, where there is now a general agreement that in order to limit our cost in maintaining the existing library services, which are more hard copies one, which is something that is not sustainable in the long term. One of the issues that will also require us to give more a response towards training judges and magistrates to utilize a more IT system.
towards this virtual library. So it is something that is happening, and I think with regard to the introduction of this project, we've been able to, you know, sort of put all of the reports of the high courts on the virtual library. So I think as we move along, and also to ensure that this system is available to all of the courts in the country, even those that are in the rural areas, the virtual library, I think it is something that we'll continue to do. But also one of the issues that I just need to indicate as to why we are drifting towards, moving away from this hard copy publication issues, it's the fact that we as courts produce reports, and these reports normally are sort of, given to tutors and other, companies who then, after having, produced them, then they sell back to us. And I think it is an issue that the Chief Justice has raised, that I think this is one area that we could save the department quite a great deal of resources if we could capacitate internally to ensure that we take the responsibility of compiling our own reports. So the visual library is but one of those steps that will help us, to achieve that more cost-effective way of dealing with the library services. So with regard to the maintenance issues, firstly, I just do want to indicate that where we have maintenance prosecutors appointed, they are the ones that coordinate all of the maintenance, related issues in relating to court. But I want to say this, that I think from the initial process when the maintenance prosecutors were appointed, we did indicate that there wasn't sufficient funding from the prosecution services to have them appointed in all of the major centers. And indeed, it still presents an issue, I think, with regard to the increase in terms of the criminal, workload, where prosecutors will tend to give more, priority to criminal matters than maintenance matters. We have accepted, I think, as a department, that in order to resolve this issue, we have to improve our maintenance services by appointing what we call maintenance officers that, I think, in terms of the Act, is doable. That will be the responsibility of the department to do. In fact, in most of the courts where there is a number of progress, we are moving in that direction. How do we, that one of those provinces in this financial year, as the DG has indicated, that part of the maintenance plan, a project that they will also indicate, we have identified as one of the hotspot areas, given the fact that Gauteng remains, our economic hub, and that's why you have a number of challenges as far as, people that flock into Gauteng, and this result in some of the problems that we have as far as the maintenance investigators. In fact, we don't have sufficient numbers. We've admitted that as a department, as far as around the entire country. And I think this year we have an additional funding that we've got through the implementation of legislation. We have also prioritized to increase our capacity in this regard by appointing maintenance officers as well as maintenance investigators to ensure that this is also integrated. But also moving forward on maintenance issues, one of the interventions that we're also going to be doing is also to, through these maintenance officers, moving away from the maintenance prosecutors, is to have what we call legally trained officers in our courts that will be able to mediate on maintenance disputes. Because currently the problem is that everyone wants to litigate on every small kind of dispute relating to maintenance problems. It's because if we don't have an infrastructure in our court that tries to enable people to do that. So one of the things that we are trying to do is to create those alternative methods in terms of which we as a court environment on maintenance matters, we need to provide a facility where people can be enabled to settle their dispute without having to go and litigate in court. And so those are some of the interventions that on maintenance program that we're going to be dealing with. Of course, I think this is a matter that they will report quite fully, because it doesn't only deal with the resolution of dispute, but also it deals with the collection of maintenance money, and also to enable the beneficiaries how that money can be effectively utilized, especially where we've been able to recover money that has been owed to people for a very long time, to enable them to have a more sustainable way of utilizing that money, for the benefit of kids. Chair, the last issue is around the backlog. I think as the DG has indicated, we have had a baseline that we have developed since the introduction of this project. In fact, that seeks to guide us in terms of what are the kind of figures that we are dealing with when we manage our sort of productivity in this regard. I think the first start of this project in 2004, we had over about 40,000 of matters that were outstanding, and I think we had different categories of how these matters were identified as being. I think in relation to the regional court, it was cases that were more than 9 months in the system. And in relation to the district courts, which only came, I think, in terms of this project last year, it's about cases that are longer than 6 months in the system. So we're at about 44,000 of those cases since this project began. And I think the target that we've set for the cluster is that by 2014, we wanted to reduce this figure by 10%. Of course, we do take into account that this is an additional assistance project which should not in the main take away the responsibility of the courts in terms of focusing in terms of their own performance targets in the courts. Of course, as this project was started, I think the idea was that it must run only for 3 years subsequent to its initial phase. And one of the discussions that we've had with the judiciary on this matter is that in order to ensure that we do away with this kind of ad hoc kind of backlog matters, because also backlog by themselves, backlog project is quite a costly exercise. It's not something that we're going to sustain, I think, as a department in the long term. Now, one of the issues that I think the judiciary, amongst others, has agreed on in order to ensure that in the long term we improve the functioning of the courts is to introduce the performance targets for courts, and I think it is a matter that individual lower courts, magistrates, that is the regional courts as well as the chief magistrates, have begun to set up standards for themselves in terms of measuring their sort of outputs in this regard. And it is a matter that as a department we are also assisting them. And I think as the last point on this issue, even though it may not relate directly to the case backlog one, I think it is a matter that now the Chief Justice has taken the ownership in relation to the productivity in the courts. I think, as you know, currently is that no one at the moment as we speak monitors the performance of courts in relation to the performance of the judiciary in relation to the lower courts and so on. But the Chief Justice has now set up a committee that tries to monitor the performance of all courts, including the lower courts, which is under the guidance of the Justice Mogoeng, who on a regular basis then monitors and also issues guidelines to ensure that, productivity in the courts, it is something that we can, look at and also try and do away with the case backlog as an additional kind of project, because in the long run, it is something that we will not be able to sustain. So part of our effort in this regard, I think this year, we'll be focusing in terms of ensuring that in line with the delivery agreement that the minister has signed, to ensure that each and every court, there are performance standards that are set for a court to enable it to perform its function in a much better way and do away with this adjunct and additional kind of resources that we're putting as far as the case backlogs are concerned. That's part of the additional information that I thought, Chair, that I could share with the committees on. But we'll share a lot of information on this, I think, as we start moving along, implementing some of these initiatives with the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. On the vacancies in the department, what we would like to report to the committee is that, firstly, overall, the current vacancy rate in the department is just a little above 9%, 9.2%. And that is when you include the judiciary. Now, by the judiciary, it's around 8.5%. It is absolutely correct that the vacancy rate in the office of the CFO has remained static and not gone down. What I would like to report to the committee is that the office of the CFO, the national office of the CFO, has an establishment of 300 people, all told. In the last 4 months, a little over 100 posts have been filled in the office of the CFO. And that is in the lower levels below the SMS. And my colleague Johnson just reported that we are going to have three chief directors starting in April, plus a director that will be starting there. In the DG's office, the DG has also appointed a project manager who is going to be looking at the internal compliance issues, including in particular the financial management in the department. The challenge that we are still having in the office of the CFO in terms of the state accountants and accounting clerks has been the turnover rate, so that as we are filling the posts become vacant. And one measure that we have taken to try and mitigate for that is to appoint people on fixed term contracts whilst the normal HR process is going on, and those people get appointed on 6 to 12 months contract. So that as we speak, the bigger challenge for us in terms of the office of the CFO with regard to personnel is the skills levels more than the actual bodies in the place. Now, those skills levels in particular have been in the area including the financial transaction and reporting area, but also in the procurement area. One of the measures that we have taken in particular in the last 3 months has been to create or rather to appoint people on a contract basis, in particular in those areas who are going to assist with asset control, asset verification. We will be reporting, we are finalizing the third quarter report, which will indicate the level of performance with regard to the filling of vacancies. With regard to the management of grievances and misconduct, again, the major challenge that we have had over the last year has been to reduce the time it takes to conclude the matters, both in the terms of grievances and in the misconduct area. Now, to mitigate that, the EXCO decided and set up a team which involves working together the employee relations area together with the forensic investigation unit to clear out the outstanding misconduct and grievance matters, in particular those that extend beyond the prescribed limit with regard to grievances. And that team has drawn together people from with assistance from the lower levels in the law enforcement area. That is chief directorate in the chief litigation officer who are assisting us to bring down the numbers and therefore also bring down the time it takes to conclude the matters. The team is working nationally and bringing down, in particular in the areas in the courts and in the master's offices, and is coordinated from the national office, so that the regional offices, HR directorates, are assisted by national office in clearing out the numbers of the grievances. The other area in which human resources has been particularly focused on is training officials, in particular in the management of leave in throughout the country, and that has resulted in the situation where the management of leave has as a challenge has been largely brought under control in the department, and we continue to work actively generating reports on a monthly basis and following up where, in particular, forms are captured outside of the 10-day period that they will require officials to capture the leaf forms in.
Chairman, sorry, on a point of order. We have spent exactly 1 hour on questions from one member. The three of us need to leave in 5 minutes. So I say because that's, and we won't come back. No, there is such a thing as between as lunch, and we've got all appointments. But
it applies to you, because both Mr. Swart and Dean Smuts are looking at one another, very bemused.
You, yes. Say you have to leave in 5 minutes.
All right. Mr. Swart.
I must say, I found it very useful, the manner that you allowed Honourable JJ to engage. And I think that's something we can learn from, because previously where we would each ask a question and then possibly a second round doesn't allow you one to engage. And so I welcome that approach, as long as it's applied consistently. So for the next 2 hours, I'll be busy. thank you for that. And thank you for the report. So may I suggest, we've got documentation that has been prepared by our researchers. Clearly, some of us have to leave early, but even in the rest of the day, there's not enough time to engage with all the issues that have been raised by our own researchers. And in view of your comment that there will be a quarterly feedback from the department, could I suggest that we provide them with all the written documentation that our researchers have prepared and the questions that are in that? If we start at the budget review and recommendation report, there are a number of issues, and that, DG, you remember, was quite scathing. And there are a number of issues that are still arising there that you might want to look at and say you haven't been dealt with that, and give us feedback on that. And then we've got the researchers' comments on the budget vote and the budget analysis, which covers a lot of, not only the budget, but a lot of issues which we've dealt with this morning. And that would be useful to get a written response, because then you're not on the hot question. You can consider your answers, and that will avoid confusion. But thank you, DG, for your presentation. As you know, JJ and myself have come 15-odd years with the department, and we're trying to establish, is it bigger an improvement? There are in certain areas, other areas obviously we gain back. And clearly the gauge, the test is the Auditor General's report. And last week we had the scopers issues, and I'd like to just touch on one or two smaller aspects. You've dealt at length with the third party issues. I'd like to get an idea as to whether, at what stage will you be able to advise us as to the extent of fraud in the third party fund. That's a huge state liability. We need to get an idea as to when we'll be able to know what is the state liabilities for fraud and corruption round about that, those third party funds. Chair, deviating slightly, a major issue that was touched on now was the Office of the Chief Justice. And I'd like to just ask a few questions around that concept. And whilst I'm fully aware we're going to get the 18th Constitution Amendment Bill and the Supreme Court's bill that was tabled last week, but just the thinking around it, I see now a department has been established, the Office of the Chief Justice, a government department. But clearly that must be an independent department. How do you see the reporting lines? I'm very clear in my mind the separation of powers. The Chief Justice must have full control over that department, but I see it's now a national department, which seems to indicate that there is something there that might go against the concept of separation of powers, and we need to make it very clear that it's fully independent and how the funds will be appropriated from Parliament, and at the end of the day that we ensure that independence. I'm just interested that the words a national department was used, and that line of accountability to Parliament to ensure that independence. So if we could just have
an indication from there. Then,
as an interim thing.
Yeah, as an interim thing. But how it will, in terms of that legislation, how you foresee it? Because there's a huge public interest around that idea, and we all ad idem about the importance of the independence of the judiciary and the Chief Justice's office. Chair, then, just an issue that's come up whilst we considered the State Liability Act, and that is state litigation, and it was touched on. And it's a major issue. I've had previous experience in that field extensively. There are a number of issues arising from that. First of all, something that you might want to look into, and something that we raised, the State Liability Act will allow government property to be attached. Is there not a possibility that the department can fund the judgments that are passed against the state to avoid outstanding judgments being held? Now, I see there's a fund, there's 300 million rand was incurred for advocates' fees. Obviously, your capital, your judgments could be far more, but that immediately would prevent any attachment of goods in the, if you were to satisfy judgment debts. The first person that knows about the judgment debt is the state attorney. And then he phones the client department and says, please pay this money, and then he waits, as was my experience. You wait for months and months and months. You then incur an interest on those amounts. But surely there could be a way, with, when you speak to National Treasury, to, there's a judgment, it's not appealed against, it's finalized, pay the judgment debt, pay the costs, finish, and the matter could work very well. As far as the privatization of state legal services, and there was a target somewhere that I read of 70% to 30%, I'd like a bit more clarity on what was intended there. If anyone can know, I might have be wrong in picking it up somewhere. It might be that the usage of private attorneys is, and you want to use more state attorneys or private advocates. I know at one stage there was a view that there should be more in-house appearances in court, and that has its inherent dangers. Your state attorneys are not equipped to appear in high court matters, and I'd like some comment. You can always come back to me on that if you're not in a position to. But one doesn't only want to look at the reduction of costs of litigation, but you want to look at the success rates. And that's something that we've got no idea about in civil litigation on behalf of the state. What are the success rates? What are the levels? And we need a separate input on that. At what point are cases settled? Do we, like the Road Accident Fund, only respond on the door of the court when we're about for settlement? Or are they settled earlier in the process if there's no prospects of success in a court case? It must be settled at the beginning point, at the point of letter of demand or summons, but not at once you've incurred counsel's fees and that. And that's a huge problem because it also blocks up your court your court roles. That is another issue that maybe you could just comment on. And then just to look at the getting back to the additional funds, I might have not heard you correctly, DG, about when we as Parliament in the budget review report, where we recommended additional funds, and I'm interested in the process there because this cuts across all departments now. This is a new amendment, the Money Bonds Amendment Act that we are now implementing. The process, I'd like to also hear from National Treasury. We as a portfolio committee for justice recommended additional funds. What is the process then? The DG, we said you need more funds. We recommended it, went through the National Assembly. Was there a block somewhere? Was it transferred to National Treasury? And then maybe National Treasury can say us, well, this is what's going to happen. This is the process. When a portfolio committee recommends additional funds, this is what has to be put. You've only got so big, the pie is only so big. If every portfolio committee recommends additional funds, clearly the budget deficit is going to be much bigger. So I'd like to just get an understanding of what the process is behind that as we go forward. Those are a few initial issues. I won't take 2 hours. Thank you very much.
Just to, if I may, DG, the issue raised by Mr. Swart regarding the Office of the State Attorney, maybe you can help me here. What criteria does a department or DG use when he or she decides, I don't want to use the Office of the State Attorney, I'm going for private counsel? Are there criteria? Sit down. And, if so, what are that what criteria are they? I've always wondered about that. What do we simply assume that it's the DG's responsibility and therefore he must carry the can in the event that the case is lost or things go wrong? Just to add to Mr. Swartz.
Sure. May I ask my question and then she answers them both in my absence? How? In absence. And I thank the Honorable Jeffrey. He used 14 minutes. Yes, no, I need to. Yes, I'm having people waiting for me in a restaurant, actually. Yes, they will. Yes, because... Okay, let me pass no comments on the parliamentary... on the parliamentary restaurant. Mr. Chairman, I am untrained, trained as I am in Wagnerian opera rather than soap opera. I try to look at the broader picture. The core function of this specific department is that of creating a machinery which delivers justice to those who need it. I am a very dissatisfied customer because the average customer out there who needs to receive the good cold justice is very dissatisfied. I made before me my leader, Prince Buthelezi, when he was in cabinet, made a very basic proposal which would overnight give the department at least 8 times fold as many judges, as many courtrooms, as many clerks, at no cost whatsoever to the state, with a massive reduction of the cost of litigation for all the litigants, and that it improved efficiency in the overall system. That was made to Minister Madun at the time, which stayed there. Then Deputy Minister, actually Minister at the time, Minister Enver Setri, took it and sent it to the Rules Board. The proposal is very simple and obvious, and it's made against the background that while the rest of society during the past 20 years has modernized, the judicial system in this country is 100 years old. It's unsuitable for anyone to litigate. The poor cannot litigate against the rich. I advise people who have a claim of less than 100,000 rands just to forget about it. It's not worth it. The proposal is that of introducing American-type discovery that will shrink a 3 months trial into 2 hours trial, an 8 months trial into 2 days trial. All the activities which are conducted at ordinary trial are conducted in the lawyer's offices. And with court report as being a private entity, the cost is exactly the same to the litigants, actually less, because you don't need to have counsel waiting for the judge to come in. You can have just your lawyers there rather than the entire trinity of an attorney and 2 advocates, and one gets on with the job. And by the time all that is done, one brings to trial only 2 or 3 crisp issues to be decided factually or legally. Does it work? Doesn't it work? Yeah, it works. It's worked for years in the United States where people are extremely litigious and they have gone for a couple of 100 years on happily suing one another in a machinery which works every day delivering results. The difficulty is that it requires the legal profession to retrain itself. And we are held a ransom in this country by lawyers and judges who don't want to having to relearn what they know because it will upset the existing hierarchies of seniorities, with people coming from the university becoming more knowledgeable than older people, and which leads to the second aspect of the proposal. This entire notion of the split bar, the advocates, the attorneys, which South Africa is so fond of, it's an absurdity, and I'm going to do what the department is going to allow me. It's an absurdity which is penalizing the entire population, which is to hire 3 lawyers to do the job that otherwise is done elsewhere by 1 lawyer. And creates a number of incestuous relationships. Now, all this has gone to the rule board. And again, what I don't understand, in this parliament, we can write laws to change society in any way we want. We can write amendments to the Constitution, but when it comes to the judicial process, hey, let the lawyers deal with it. This is too important, the two things that only lawyers can deal with legal matters and with the legal fraternity. I mean, this is a medieval guild which defies any law of competition and which must go. This entire notion of junior and senior advocates, it's against the principle of equality of citizens before the law and before the judge. You cannot have that equality if one can be represented by somebody who is painted to be a better lawyer because senior, against somebody who cannot afford the same service. It's an entire system which is antique, unjustified, and must go. And it must go not through the rules board, but must go through the initiative of the department, because the rules board will never change the rules by which the legal fraternity gains and maintains its powers over society. And I'm not going to kill, and I'm not going to quote Richard III, as tempted as I am. I haven't said that when you spoke.
Now, I think that my friend Mario's ideas are interesting. I think that this is the wrong forum. You are surely not expecting the departmental officials to respond to your proposals for law reform. Some of that reform is present in the Chief Justice's thinking on the civil justice system. I think there is going to be plenty of scope for advancing what are interesting, to many people very disturbing ideas, but I just think with respect that this is the wrong forum, Chair. May I just give you a few, half my questions.
I mean, I'm being censored by a colleague. I mean, I accept to be censored by you.
You know, they will answer you if they wish, but I just, Chair, given what the DG has told us about security, what we've heard about requests or non-requests for funds, the receipt or non-receipt of funds, I think you said earlier that you were about to call in the army because you had no money and therefore the army must come in and help you secure the court. I would just, given that background, like to understand what it is that I have read in the report, therefore City Press. You appear to have given a contract to Bosasa in December to the tune of 391 million over 24 months and another one for 333 million precisely to look after court security. And the problem about this naturally is the fact that Bosasa security has been investigated by the SIU, who reported to Parliament that there was fraud and corruption in Mr. Hofmeyr's view in the allocation of certain prison tenders for the prison kitchens. I think that matter is now in the hands of the NPA, as I understand it. But what are we doing as a Department of Justice granting tenders to a body which is right now also in the hands of the prosecutorial authorities? Secondly, on the matter of the libraries, and Advocate Gianni was interesting on the subject, and of course we must make more online reading available. But third, the judges are, you know, very unhappy. And if I may draw to your attention just simply the case of the SCA. And I see in the budget, the Constitutional Court is getting 117 million this year. The Supreme Court of Appeal is getting 17 million. Is that about right? Must I assume, because the department still runs the courts, that you decide how much money goes into what? Into the library or into... Because, of course, it ought not to be that way. Even for the Chapter 9s, the money gets transferred, finished and clocked. It's nobody's business what a Chapter 9, how it deals with its budget. And that's how it will become with the courts, once the courts are fully in the hand of the Chief Justice, the heads of course, and the Judicial Council and the admin agency. But so do I understand correctly at this point that somebody sitting here decides how much money the Supreme Court of Appeal gets for its library. Now, I'm told it is this modest amount. Ms. Lutuli, who is the Concord librarian, Advocate Gianni, was asked by the Chief Justice to go visit all the libraries because the judges are unhappy. And during her visit to the SCA, she advised, my source of information is the GCB, its advocates. She divulged to the SCA that the Constitutional Court has 8 fully qualified librarians and other staff who deal with the online facilities and the website. The fact is that the Supreme Court of Appeal has 1 librarian, 1 unqualified library assistant, that the Concord's library allocation from the department for 2010 was 8 million rand, whereas the SCA's was 100,000 rand. And that has to include all the 22 permanent judges' chambers, subscriptions, and they haven't bought a single book in 18 months, and the allocation doesn't cover subscriptions. And now, you know, the fact of the matter is the SCA is the court with the full jurisdiction. Please, it's just not right. And since you as a department appear to be deciding what portion of what money they may use for what, can I appeal to you, please, to look at that properly? I would suggest to my colleagues who thought that maybe this is where we move a bit of money around. Give the SCA more money and maybe ring fence some money for the books. And then, may I, just as a last thing, I will ditch all the other questions I had. But on the TRC, I don't understand the numbers. We were advised last time we saw you that there were 875 cases outstanding, that the Home Affairs stressed for you 500. Many of whom were deceased, so you just had to find the next of kin. And that left, a total out of the 875, that left 375 to trace. I'm delighted the IEC has helped you, but you seem to have found 461. So to me, the figures don't quite match up. Be that as it may, you must obviously do the reparations, even though we're into the second or third generation. But now I want to ask you about the money, the regulations and the idea of the IGT. We know there is now 1 billion sitting in the President's Fund, right? And you are using it for exhumations and to help the families travel and for hotel costs. Yes. Dr. De Beer agrees that DG. But we must decide how productively to spend that money. Now please tell me something about the regulations, of which the ones for is it the education and the health are about to go to cabinet, then to be published. And I ask these questions against the background that the Defence Minister has just tabled a bill for military veterans promising them housing, health, education to certain amounts, and she neglected to cost that exercise when she went away at the insistence of my colleague to cost. Alexander Forbes came back with a figure of 65 billion. Right? So it's not doable. She's going to have to cut back, they're going to have to rethink. But what I'm saying to you is this. It is possible for the same government to come with a proposal for measures of... The things are comparable, are they not? The TRC victims are also the victims of what happened in the past, in the conflict between the various sides. Check out the military veterans, I'll bet you the military veterans bill will go through at a reduced costing. I'll bet you those people will be looked after because there is a political interest, no doubt, at play. Whereas our TRC victims, so many years later now, are just neglected. Who is in charge of the TRC component? Is it still Mr. Seku? Who is driving it? Because it is not being driven. What is going to be in the regulations? What are the cost implications? You can say to our people, oh, you are a declared victim, therefore you may now go to the local hospital and you are entitled to this, that and the other. Who's going to pick up the tab? Is it part of the regulations that the tabs get picked up by the relevant department, or are monies going to come from the President's Fund? If so, what is the conduit going to be? And that applies now to the two sets of things where the regulations are. Because I'm going to tell you, from the day the final report was tabled, our poor people, in fact before that, because they created a mechanism for people who needed help right away, they all went off to the health and the education and the housing, and they came back to the TRC because it still existed then, empty-handed to say, weren't helped. And the same disaster is going to happen again. But now, most of all, this idea that the IDT must now assist through community liaison people to go and identify interventions in the communities that the TRC has listed. I have misgivings, and I want to ask you something. I mean, you're on the point of signing that contract, aren't you? You're doing it. But the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation has some ideas, some thinking. And I'd like to ask you to invite them to your stakeholder workshop at minimum. They have some thinking for major bursaries. Let's make sure we use the $1 billion so that it has productive effect. Because I don't know what's going to happen if we have community liaison work, and you know, there's a lot of service delivery unhappiness, and people are going to try to serve their own interests. I don't know. This thing is going to, it isn't going to work. So I'd much rather you listen to the Institute for Justice and Reconciliation. But then if it could all come back to us, please, for obviously for the final blessing. Thank you.
DG, before you even begin to answer, honourable members, ladies and gentlemen, I propose, with your permission and blessing, that we stop there. So you have until after lunch. We will adjourn just now, once you've finished listening to me speak, and reconvene back here at 2. Alright. Alright. I'm mindful of the fact that Mr. Swart, the Honorable Dean Smut, and Mr. Ambrosini won't come back here. And Debbie Schaefer. And Faki Mentu. She will be here? All right, fine. Okay. I'm bringing this to your... I'm raising this because of an invitation I've received. I'm not sure if Unani sent it to all members of the committee, and that's why I'm raising it in this fashion. Invitation, Institute for Security Studies Seminar, Balancing Law and Tradition, the Regulation of Traditional Justice in South Africa. Essentially, the IISS is holding a seminar about the Traditional Courts Bill. The date is 6 April. Well, I'm deployed in some way in KwaZulu-Natal to do election work, so there's no way the ANC is going to allow me to come down to Cape Town and attend the seminar. But they do qualify and say, even if one or two members can attend, Wednesday, 6 April, venue ISS conference room in Woodstock, time 1400 hours. The speakers are Nomfundo Gobodo, Regional Director, Legal Resources Center, Khoshi Thobejane, in his capacity as Secretary General of Controlesa, he also happens to be a Member of Parliament, and Mazibuko Jara, is that how you pronounce? Jaha, okay, my apologies. Researcher, Law, Race and Gender Research Unit, UCT. So, honourable members, if you are able to attend, please do so and participate. It's hell of a short, 1400 to 1600. So, I don't know what kind of seminar this is, series of sound bites, but you decide for yourself. The second issue I want to bring to your attention, and this one is a little more serious. It's a letter from the speaker to me in my capacity as chairperson. He received a request from a Mrs. Elsie Kumalo from Greenpoint here in Cape Town. Officials at the Johannesburg Magistrates Court have withheld 10,000 rand of her money. Amongst other people, she has gone to the Public Protector, the Presidency, Advocate Masuta in his capacity as a member of the Magistrates Commission, Mr. Norduma, who is the court manager at the Johannesburg Magistrates Court, the chairperson of the NCOP, Mr. Mahangu, and finally the Office of the Speaker. It is expected that we must do something about this. He says in his last paragraph too, I will also send a copy to the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee of Justice for his consideration. I'm assuming he means the committee's consideration. So,
on the last thing, Chair.
All right.
We all, I think, receive cries for help or constituent, you know, people with different letters and cases all the time. All the time. And it has occurred to me that it might assist a very great deal if we created a mechanism in the committee, perhaps in the hands of the secretary, for some things to be passed directly onto the department for response and then just copied to the committee. Right now, I've got, amongst really many other things, I don't get to them, but two cases of people whose court records, the trial records, are lost. You know, the Sun City prisoners who want to appeal. If they can't appeal their sentences, somebody's going to have to release them. I've got one of those, but I've got somebody from the Western Cape also who can't get a copy, and he's exhausted every avenue. So would you perhaps think, Chair, about the possibility of creating a mechanism here?
Mechanism, I mean, but I think our immediate concern would be to get this woman's 10,000 rands back to her, and then after that establish what went wrong.
All we've got is an allegation of a 10,000 that's owed to her. We don't know yet whether
right.
It is owed to her. We need to establish that.
Chair, I would have thought that should be referred to the DG and she can take it up and give us back a report within, say, a week or two.
If she's been to the public protector, then there is something there.
Everybody has said no.
Then there's something there about that. Yeah. I've come in sort of late, so I might have missed it, but I mean, surely court services from the department would be able to quite quickly find out what the... Yes, I think rather that that's the source rather than the public protector, which would have to then conduct their own investigation.